Osho, The Grass Grows by Itself. Talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 3.
Bhagwan, Sekyo said to one of his monks, "Can you get hold of emptiness?" "I'll try," said the monk, and he cupped his hands in the air. "That's not very good," said Sekyo. "You haven't got anything there." "Well, master," said the monk, "please show me a better way." Thereupon, Sekyo seized the monk's nose and gave it a great yank. "Ouch!" yelled the monk. "You hurt me." "That's the way to get hold of emptiness," said Sekyo.
Man is too full of himself, and that is his undoing. Man should be like a hollow bamboo, so the existence can pass through him. Man should be like a porous sponge, not hard, so the doors and the windows of his being are open, and existence can pass from one end to another without any hindrance. In fact, finding no one inside, the winds blow. They come from one window, they go out from another window of your being. Nobody is found within. This emptiness is the highest bliss possible. But you are like a hard, unporous rock, are like a hard steel rod. Nothing passes through you. You resist everything. You don't allow. You go on fighting on all sides and in all directions, as if you are on a great war with existence. There is no war going on. You are simply befooled by yourself. Nobody is there to destroy you. The whole supports you. The whole is your very earth on which you are standing, the very sky in which you breathe, you live. In fact, you are not only the whole is. When one understands this, by and by one drops the inner hardness. There is no need for it. There is no enmity. The whole is friendly towards you. The whole cherishes you, loves you. Otherwise, why you are here? The whole brings you forth like a tree is brought forth by the earth. The whole would like to participate in all your blessings, in all the celebrations that are possible. When you will flower, the whole will flower through you. When you will sing, the whole will sing through you. When you will dance, the whole will dance with you. You are not separate. The feeling of separateness creates fear. Fear makes you unporous. The feeling of insecurity as if the hole is going to destroy you. The feeling that you are a stranger here, an outsider, and you have to fight inch by inch your way towards your destiny, makes you a hard steel rod. Of course, then many things simply disappear from your life. You live in anguish. You live in anxiety. You live in intense pain. And you live this on your own accord. Be porous. Be floating. Fight is not needed at all. Rather, a merger. These are the two attitudes open for man. The attitude of a warrior and the attitude of a lover. It is your choice. You can choose. But remember, then certain consequences follow. If you choose the path of the warrior and you become a fighter with everything that surrounds you, you will be always in misery. This is creating hell around you. In the very attitude of fighting, the hell is created. Or you can become a lover, a participant. Then this hole is your home. You are not a stranger. You are at home. No fight. You simply flow with the river. Then ecstasy will be your flowering. Then each moment will become ecstatic. There is no hell except you, and there is no heaven except you. It is your attitude, how you look at the whole. A religion is the way of the lover, and science is the way of the fighter. Science is the way of the will, as if you are here to conquer nature's secrets. As if you are here to enforce your will and domination on existence. This is not only foolish, it is futile also. Foolish because it will create a hell around you. And futile in the final sense, because you will become more and more dead, less and less alive. You will lose all possibilities of being blissful. And in the end, you will have to come back from it. You can go for a while on the path of the will, but only frustration and more frustration will happen through it. You will be defeated more and more. You will feel more and more important, and more enmity will be around you. You will have to come back from it. Grudgingly, resistant, but you will have to come back from it. Because nobody can rest finally with a fighting attitude. Because with the fighting attitude, there is no rest possible. You cannot relax. the path of religion is the path of love. From the very beginning, you are not fighting anybody. The whole exists for you, and you exist for the whole. And there is an inner harmony. Nobody is here to conquer anybody else. It is not possible. Because how one part can conquer another part? And how part can conquer the whole? Absurd notions only create nightmares for you, nothing else. Seeing the whole situation, you come out of the whole and you dissolve into it. And in between also, every moment you are part of the whole, you breathe it, you live it, and it lives through you, it breathes through you. Your life and its life are not two things. You are just like a wave in the ocean. Once you understand this, meditation becomes possible. Once you understand this, you relax. You throw all the armor that you have created around you as a security. You are no more afraid. Fear disappears and love arises. In this state of love, emptiness happens. Or, if you can allow emptiness to happen, love will flower in it. Love is a flower of empty, total emptiness. Emptiness is the situation. Both the ways it can work. So there are two types of religion. One which creates emptiness in you and around you, so that the flowering becomes possible. You have created the situation, now the flower bubbles up automatically. Finding no resistance, the seed suddenly blooms into a flower. There is a jump in your being, an explosion. Buddhism and Zen follow this path. They create emptiness in and around you. There is another path also, a second type of religion, which creates love in you, which creates devotion in you. Mira, Chaitanya, they love, and they love the total so deeply that they find their beloved everywhere. On every leaf, on every stone is the signature of the beloved. Everywhere he is, they dance. There is nothing else but to celebrate. Everything is ready. Only the celebration has to start on your part. Nothing else is lacking. A bhakta, a lover, simply celebrates, enjoys. And in that enjoyment of love and celebration, the ego disappears. Emptiness follows. Either you create emptiness, like a Buddha, Tilopa, Sekho, and others, or you create love, like Meera, Chaitanya, Jesus. Create one and the other follows, because they cannot live separate. They don't have any separate existence. Love is one face of emptiness. Emptiness is nothing but love in another aspect. They come together. You bring one, you invite one, the other follows automatically as a shadow of it. It depends on you. If you want to follow the path of meditation, become empty. Don't bother about love, it will come on its own accord. Or, if you find it very difficult to meditate, then love. Then become a lover. And meditations and emptinesses will follow you. This is how it should be. Because there are two types of human mind, the feminine and the male. The feminine mind can love easily, to be empty is difficult. And when I say feminine mind, I don't mean females, because many females have male mind. And many males have feminine mind. So they are not equivalent. When I say feminine mind, I don't mean the feminine body. You may have a feminine body and not a feminine mind. Feminine mind is the mind who feels love easier. That's all. That is my definition of the feminine mind. Who feels love easier? Natural. Who can flow into love without any effort. The male mind is one for whom love is an effort. He can, but he will have to do it. For whom love cannot be his whole being. Just one thing in many other things. Not even the most important. He can sacrifice his love for science. He can sacrifice his love for the country. He can sacrifice his love for any tribal affair, for business, for money, for politics. Love is not such a deep thing with a male mind. It is not so effortless as it is for a feminine mind. Meditation is easier. He can become empty easily. So this is my definition. If you find becoming empty easily, then do that. If you find it is very difficult, then don't be unhappy and don't feel hopeless. You will always find love easier. I have not come across a man who finds both difficult. So there is hope for everybody. If meditation is difficult, love will be easier. Has to be. If love is easier, meditation will be difficult. If love is difficult, meditation will be easier. So just feel yourself. And it is not concerned with your body. Not with your physical structure, your hormones, no. It is the quality of your inner being. Once you find it, things become very, very easy. Because then you don't try on the wrong path. You can try on the wrong path for many lives, you will not attain anything. And if you try on the right path, even the first step can become the last. Because you simply, naturally flow into it. There is nothing like effort. Effortlessly you flow. Zen is for the male mind. Soon I will balance it by talking about Sufism, because Sufism for the feminine mind. And these are the two extremes, Zen and Sufism. Sufis are lovers, great lovers. In fact, in the whole history of human consciousness, never more daring lovers have existed than Sufis. Because they are the only ones who have turned God into their beloved. The God is the woman. They are the lovers. Soon I will balance Zen. Insists on emptiness. That's why in Buddhism there is no concept of God. It is not needed. People in the West cannot understand how a religion exists without the concept of a God. Buddhism has no concept of any God. There is no need. Because Buddha's insistence is to be simply empty. And then everything follows, but who bothers? Once you are empty, things will take their own course. A religion exists without God. This is simply a miracle. In the West, people who write about religion and the philosophy of religion, they are always in trouble. How to define religion? They can define Hinduism, Mohammedanism, Christianity easily. Buddhism creates the trouble. They can define that the God is the center of all religion, but then Buddhism becomes a problem. They can define prayer is the essence of religion, but again Buddhism creates the trouble because there is no God and no prayer. No mantra, nothing. You have only to be empty. Even the concept of God will not allow you to be empty. Prayer will be a disturbance. Chanting will not allow you to be empty. Simply being empty and everything happens. Emptiness is the secret key of Buddhism. You be in such a way that you are not. Let me explain you a little more about emptiness, then it will be possible to go into this Zen anecdote. Physicists have been working for 300 years to find the base, the substance of matter. And the deeper they reached, the more they were puzzled. Because the deeper they groped, less and less substantial was matter. Less and less material was matter. And when they really stumbled upon the source of matter, they simply couldn't believe, because it was against all their conceptions. It was not matter at all, it was simply energy. Energy is non-substantial. It has no weight. You cannot see it. You can see only the effects of it. You can never see it directly. Eddington, in 1930, said that we were in search for matter, and now the whole insight into matter says that there is no matter. And matter looks more and more like a thought and less like a thing. suddenly the insight of Buddha became very, very significant again. Because Buddha did the same with the human matter, the human stuff. Physicists were trying to penetrate matters in an objective way to find what is there inside it, and they found nothing. A total emptiness. And the same was discovered by Buddha in his inner journey. He was trying to find who is there inside, the substance of human consciousness. And the more he penetrated, the more he became aware that it becomes more and more empty. And when suddenly he reached to the very core, there was nothing. All has disappeared. The house was empty. And around this emptiness, everything exists. Emptiness is your soul. So Buddha had to coin a new word. It had never existed before. With a new discovery, you have to change your language. New words have to be coined because you have revealed new truths. Old words cannot contain them. Buddha has to create a new word. In India, people have always believed in the reality of the soul, Atma. And Buddha discovered that there is no soul, no Atma. He had to coin a new word, Anatta. Anatta means no self. Deepest hidden in you is emptiness. A state of no self. You are not. You only appear to be. Let me explain you in a different way, because it is one of the most difficult things to understand. Even if you understand intellectually, almost impossible to trust it that you are not. Because your being seems so taken for granted. And then you can ask foolish questions always. Buddha was asked again and again, if you are not, then who is speaking? If you are not, then who becomes hungry? And who goes begging in the town? If you are not, then who is standing before me? The Emperor Wu in China asked Bodhidharma the first thing, that if you say you are not, and nothing is, and emptiness is the very substance of your inner being, that who is this fellow talking to me, standing before me? Bodhidharma shrugged his shoulders and said, I don't know. Nobody knows. And Buddha says, nobody can know. Because it is not a substance that you can encounter as an object. It is no substance, you cannot encounter it. And this Buddha calls realization. When you come to understand that the innermost emptiness cannot be known, it is unknowable, then you have become a realized man. Difficult, so let me explain it to you. You go to a movie, something very beautiful is happening there. The screen is empty. Then the projector starts working. The screen disappears. On the projected pictures, hide it completely. And what are these projected pictures? Nothing but a play of light and shade. You see somebody is throwing a spear on the screen. The spear moves fast. But what is happening exactly? Movement is only appearance. It is not happening. It cannot happen. In fact, a movie is not a movie at all, because it has no movement. All the pictures are still. But an appearance is created through a trick. And the trick is that many still pictures of the spear in different positions are flashed on the screen so fast that you cannot see the gap between two pictures. And you have the feeling as if the spear is moving. I raise my hands. You can take 100 pictures of my hand in different positions and then flash them so fast that the eyes cannot catch the gap between two pictures. Then you will see the hand being raised. 100 still pictures or 1,000,000 still pictures are projected and the movement is created. And if the film is a three-dimensional film and somebody is throwing a spear, you may be so much taken by it that you may lean to the right or the left to avoid the spear. When for the first time three dimensions pictures came into existence, they scared people, because a horse is coming running and you become afraid, because the horse is soon going to enter into the hall and you may lean to right or left as the case may be to avoid the class. Movement is false. It is not happening there. It is just fast moving still pictures. And the falseness is not apparent unless you see a film moving very slowly, being projected very slowly. The same in a different sense is happening in life. Thoughts are projected by our mind so fast that you cannot see the gap between two thoughts. The screen is completely covered by the thoughts. And thoughts move so fast that you cannot see that each thought is separate. That's what Tilopa says. Thoughts are like clouds without any roots, with no home. And a thought is not related to another thought. A thought is an individual unit. Just like dust particles, separate. But they move so fast, you cannot see the gap between. You feel they have a unity, a certain association. That association is a false notion. And because of that association, ego is created. Buddha says, fast-moving thoughts create an illusion as if there is some center to them, as if they are related to one thing. They are not related, they are up without roots, like clouds. When you meditate, you will understand that each single thought is an individual thought, not related to another. Between the two is the emptiness of your being. They come and go, but they come and go so fast, you cannot see the intervals. Ego is created. And then you start feeling that there is somebody as a center in you to which everything belongs. Thoughts, actions. And Buddha says there is nobody inside you. When you will go deeper, you will understand the truth of it. It is not a philosophical doctrine. Buddha can be defeated very easily by argument. And he was thrown out of this country because Indians are great arguers. They have done nothing else for 5,000 years than argument. And through argument, Buddha can be defeated. Because the whole thing seems to be absurd. Buddha is saying, there are actions, there is no actor. There are thoughts, there is no thinker. There is hunger, there is satiety. There is illness, there is health. But there is no center to which they all belong. They are just like clouds moving in an empty sky, not related to each other at all. Through experience, nobody can defeat Buddha. Through logic, it is very simple. Soon Buddha became aware that through logic he can be defeated very easily. Then what to do? And India had great scholars in those days, great pundits, great logicians, hair splitters. So Buddha simply declared that I am not a metaphysician and I am not a philosopher and I have no doctrine to offer. And these are not conclusions of my intellect. If somebody wants to understand them, he will have to come and live with me and do whatsoever I say. And after a year, if he lives with me silently in meditation, then I am ready to argue with him, never before it. It happened. Many great scholars came to him, but this was his condition. Sariputta came. He was a very famous scholar. He had 500 his own disciples. They were great scholars in their own right. They knew all the Vedas, they knew all the Upanishads, they knew all the wisdom of the centuries. And they had very, very keen intellects. Came Sariputta and Buddha said, you have come, that's good, but for 1 year you have to remain silent. Because I have no doctrine to propose. So there is no possibility of any argument. I have something in my being to share, but no doctrine to propose. So if you like, you can be here. Then came Malunkaputta, another great scholar. And the same Buddha said to him, 1 year you sit silently by my side, not raising a single question. 1 year you have to subside your mind and penetrate into the intervals. After 1 year, exactly after 1 year, if you have some questions, I will answer. Sariputta was also sitting there, he started laughing. Malunkaputta asked, what is the matter? Why are you laughing? Sariputta said, don't be befooled by this man. If you have to ask anything, ask immediately. After 1 year, you will not be able to ask anything. Because the same happened with me. 1 year meditating silently, questions disappeared. 1 year meditating silently, the argumentating mind disappeared. the arguer disappeared. 1 year sitting by the side of this man, one becomes empty. And then he laughs. And then he plays tricks, and then he says, now you ask, where are your doctrines and principles and arguments? And nothing arises inside. So Malinkaput, if you have to ask, right now is the moment. Otherwise, never. Buddha said, I will fulfill my promise if you remain 1 year. And if you have any questions, I will answer whatsoever the questions. Malinkaputta remained. 1 year passed. He forgot completely about the year passing and the day has come back. But Buddha remembered. Exactly the day after 1 year, he said to Malinkaputta, now you stand, Malinkaputta, and you can ask. And Malinkaputta stood there silent with closed eyes. And then he said, there is nothing to ask and there is nobody to ask. I have completely disappeared. Buddhism is an experience and Zen is the purest of all Buddha's teachings. The very essence. And the center on which the whole experience moves is emptiness. How to become empty? That is what a meditation is all about. How to become so silent that you cannot even see yourself, because that too is a disturbance. Feeling that I am is also a disturbance. Even that goes. One is completely effaced, utterly effaced. The seat is clean. It becomes like a summer sky. Clouds are no more there. Just the depth, the infinite blueness. Ending nowhere, beginning nowhere. This is what Buddha calls the anatta, the innermost center of non-being, of no self. Buddha says, you walk but there is no walker, you eat but there is no eater, you are born but there is nobody who is born, and you will be ill and you will become old, but there is nobody who becomes ill and becomes old. And you will die, but there is nobody who dies. And this is what eternal life is. Not being born. How can you die? Not being there, how can you be ill and healthy? These things happen. If you become a deep witness to them, by and by, you know they happen on their own accord. They are not concerned with you. They are not happening in any way related to you. Unrelated, homeless, rootless. This is the utter enlightenment. Knowing this, that things happen like dreams. One is not bothered this way or that. One is neither happy nor unhappy. One simply is not. Buddha says, you can never be happy, because in the very insistence that you are, unhappiness hides. You can never be liberated, because you are the bondage. Liberation is not of you. liberation is from you. This is the deepest ever touched, the deepest core. Mahavir says, you will be enlightened. Buddha says, you are the hindrance. Mahavir says, you will live in the moksha, in the ultimate state of consciousness, blissful, eternally blissful. Buddha says, unless you die, you will never attain to that state. You are the only barrier, the only hindrance, the obstacle. When you are not, that state is. That state is not yours. You cannot claim it. In fact, because you are, you don't allow that state to be. It is already here within you, this very moment, but you don't allow it to function. You try to control it, manipulate it. The ego is the great manipulator, the controller. And the whole effort of all the Buddhas is how to drop the control. Once the control is dropped, the controller disappears. That is what I am trying to do with many meditations with you. How to drop the control. How to drop the great manipulator. You whirl in a dervish dance. In the beginning you are there. Soon you feel nausea. That nausea is not only physical. Deeply it is spiritual. You start feeling nausea when the moment comes, when the control will be dropped. When the moment nears, you start feeling nausea. The nausea is that the control is being lost. You feel dizzy. You feel you may fall down. These are not just physical things. Deep inside, the ego is feeling being thrown off the track. The ego is feeling dizzy. The ego is feeling, now if a little more this whirling goes, I will not be able to be there. You start feeling like a vomit. In fact, that vomit is not only physical, just one part of it is physical. Deeper part is the vomit of the ego. If you continue, there will be a physical vomiting. But if you don't bother about it, soon physical vomiting will disappear. And then the real vomit will happen. One day suddenly the ego is vomited. Suddenly an ugly phenomena within you escapes. Suddenly the disease from you is thrown out. Suddenly you are ego-freed. Unexpectedly it happens. You cannot even believe it for the first time it happens. You cannot believe that without the ego and you are. Nobody inside and you are. And you are so perfectly and so beautiful and so blissful and without anybody being there. The ego has to be thrown off center because it has become so deep rooted in your mind through many lives. It has usurped your whole being. Emptiness is being thrown into the background, in the unconscious. and the ego has usurped the throne. Now the ego has become the king. And the ego goes on manipulating everything. This parable, this is small anecdote, will tell you many things about how the ego can be thrown off center. Sekko said to one of his monks, "Can you get hold of emptiness? I will try," said the monk. And he cupped his hands in the air. The master is playing a trick. The master asks, "Can you get hold of emptiness?" The question is tricky. And if the disciple was of any understanding, he would not have tried. The very effort to catch hold of emptiness is stupid. You can catch hold of something. You cannot catch hold of nothing. How can you catch hold of nothing? The disciple still feels that emptiness is something. He still feels that emptiness is not empty. It is a name, a label of something which can be caught hold. If he was of a little understanding, even a little understanding, he would have done something else than catching hold of emptiness. And that was the test. There are stories where a master asked the disciple, "Can you get hold of emptiness?" And the disciple seized the master's nose and gave it a great yank. That would have been absolutely right. Because the question is absurd. Whatsoever you try is going to fail from the very beginning. Nothing will help. These are the Zen koans. A Zen master gives you an absurd problem which cannot be solved. There is no way to it. I have heard about a tie shop somewhere in America. And a father was purchasing a tie puzzle for his child. And he tries to fix it. And he tried and tried in many ways, but something was always wrong and it won't come. So he asked the manager of the shop that even I cannot make any head or tail out of this. So how you suppose that a small child will be able? The manager says, "Nobody can do it. This is just to give the child a taste of modern life. It is not meant to be. Nobody can do it. It will not fix. these parts, different parts, are not made to fix. This is just to give a taste of modern life, that whatsoever you do, nothing is of avail. In the end you will feel frustrated. Do this or that. Millions of alternatives are there, but all are false. Because from the very beginning, the puzzle is not a puzzle, but absurdity. A puzzle is that which can be solved by some intelligence. An absurdity is which by its very nature is not soluble, cannot be solved. A koan is an absurd puzzle. The master says, can you get hold of emptiness? Now from the very beginning, any solution is debarred. In the very wording of the question, he has created an absurdity. How can you catch hold of nothing? Something, of course, you can catch hold, but nothing. Emptiness. All your efforts are doomed from the very beginning. And this is the whole thing that the master is trying for the disciple to become aware. But the ego takes the problem immediately and it starts trying to solve it. It becomes a challenge. That's why so many people try crossword puzzles, this and that. Just looking at the newspaper, their ego is challenged. They have to solve it, otherwise it will haunt them. So intelligent that how this puzzle can exist, they will have to solve it. It becomes an obsession. Millions of people waste millions of hours solving foolish things. But the ego takes the challenge. When the master said, can you get hold of emptiness? He is exciting the ego. And ego is the most stupid thing in human life. You can excite it by anything. By anything. An advertisement in the newspaper that do you have a 2-car garage or only 1-car garage? And immediately the ego feels disturbed because other people are having 2-car garages and you are having only one. Your life is wasted. You existed for nothing. Move fast, borrow money, or do something. Even if you get ulcers on the way, it is okay. Cancer, one can tolerate, but one cannot tolerate a 1-car garage. Commit suicide. But you have to have 2-car garage. Ego is the most stupid thing. And the whole market of salesmen and advertisers depends on your ego. They excite the ego, they exploit you. And it is difficult to prevent them unless you drop the ego. They will go on. They will go on. A big car becomes an ego symbol. I have heard Mullah Nasruddin went to America. In his town, He had never seen a bigger car than Fiat. When he saw such big cars, he was simply puzzled. What to call them, because they are not cars and they are not buses. And in such a big car, only one person is sitting, or a dog. And what is the matter? He saw so big houses, what to call them? Because in his town, a two-story house is called Atari, a palace. Then he saw 100-storied house. His mind boggled. You cannot call them houses, you cannot call them palaces. Simply there exists no word for them. And then he saw the Niagara. He closed his eyes. And he says, it seems I am seeing a dream. Because he had seen small waterfalls. His town has a waterfall. But it runs only in the rainy season. What is this? And he became so puzzled that even it was not possible how to appreciate such big, tremendous things. And he was not able to say anything to the guide. And that too he started feeling guilty that he must say something. And then they came across a small river. So Mullah Nasruddin thought this is the opportunity. He said, it seems somebody's car's radiator is leaking. Things go on becoming bigger and bigger and bigger. Just because of the ego. They are not needed. There exists no necessity for them. Life becomes more and more complex because of the stupid ego. And once you give the challenge, it is always ready to take it without even asking whether this is possible, impossible, rational, irrational, no. The master Seko said, can you get hold of emptiness? I will try, said the monk. That is the answer of the ego, I will try. It takes all sorts of challenges. And cone is such a challenge that it is made in such a way that you cannot solve it. And trying to solve it, you will become aware that your very effort to solve it is idiotic. In trying to solve it, you will become aware that you have taken the challenge that was wrong. That one who says within you that I will try and I will do is important. A cone is given to a disciple to feel the impotency that you cannot do, to feel the helplessness, because the ego can disappear only in a helpless state, otherwise not. The ego can disappear only when it is a total failure. Not even a slight possibility of its success exists, only then. Otherwise it can go on hoping that I will do something else, or something else, and I will try this alternative and that. There must exist a possibility so that the emptiness can be caught. You can catch hold of it. I will try. Remember always to watch. Before you say, I will try. Don't allow the ego to come in. Just watch. Be intelligent. Don't be egoistic. Intelligence is good. Being egoistic, in fact, hinders the functioning of your intelligence. Such a simple thing, the disciples would have hit the master right then and there. But what type of nonsense you are telling me? But people have tried all sorts of nonsense. Because the ego says there must be some way. The ego says if the problem exists, then the solution must exist. What is the necessity? You can create a problem. There is not any necessity in nature for the solution to exist. And as I have observed, 99% problems of philosophy are foolish. They cannot be solved. But great minds are involved in solving them. For example, simple problems, who created the world, is foolish. But great theologians, religious people, scholars, waste their whole life for thousands of years. Many have been worried, who created the world? And it cannot be solved. It is a koan. It is absurd. Because the very question is such, the nature of it is such, that whatsoever you do, it will again jump and stand on its feet. It will not be killed. For example, if you say, A created the world, immediate the question is there, who created A? B created A. Then the question is there, who created B? You go on and on. And finally you will have to say, just fed up with the whole thing, that this Z, nobody created this Z. But why come up to Z? Why not say in the first place that nobody created this world? Why go from A to Z? When you have to concede that nobody created God, then why say that God created the world? If God can exist without being created, then why not this existence? There seems to be no reason. But people go on. And they think they are doing very serious religious thinking. This is not religious thinking at all. In fact, no thinking is religious. Non-thinking is religious. Can you get hold of emptiness? What nonsense! Emptiness is nothing. How can you get hold of it? It has no boundaries, no limitations to it. It is not possible. But the ego says, I will try. Said the monk, and he cupped his hands in the air. Not only he said, he tried. He cupped his hands in the air. You may think that you would have done better. What you will do? Whatsoever you will do will be the same. Without knowing what you will do, I say it will be the same. You jump this way and that and try to catch hold, you will simply look foolish. He cupped his hands in the air. That is not very good, said Sekko. You have not got anything there. There is something to be understood here. If your hands are open, the emptiness is there. If your hands are not open and you have made a fist, the emptiness has disappeared. In a fist, there is no space. In an open hand, The whole sky is there, but it is in an open hand. The meaning is very subtle but very beautiful. If you try to catch hold, you will miss. If you don't try, it is already there. If you don't try, in your open hand, the whole sky exists. Nothing less than that. If you try to catch hold of the sky, and you make a fist out of your hand, everything has disappeared. What is there in your fist? Maybe a little still air. And that too shows that the fist is not exactly complete. That's why. If the fist is exactly complete, the all sky has disappeared from there. The ultimate is already there. No effort is needed to get it. In the very effort you miss and lose and go astray. One man came to Linchi, a great Zen master, and asked that, "I am very much troubled. I would like to become a Buddha myself. What to do?" Linchi chased him out with his staff, out of the temple. He hit him hard. The man started running. He chased him out of the temple. Somebody who was standing by, he said, "This is too hard, and the poor man has not asked anything wrong. He was simply asking a very religious question and looked very sincere. You would have looked at his eyes, his face. He had really traveled a long way to come to you. And he was asking a simple, religious, sincere question, how to become a Buddha. And what you did seems to be too hard on the poor man and unjustified." Linchi said, "I chased him out because he is asking an absurd thing. He is already a Buddha. And if he tries, he will miss. And if he can understand why I hit him and chased, then he should leave all effort. There is nothing to be achieved. He has to be just himself. He has to be just whatsoever he is. Loose and natural," what Tilopa says. And Buddha is already there in the inner shrine. One has not to become a Buddha. One is always born a Buddha. Buddhahood is your innermost essential nature. You need not inquire about it. You need not try for it. The poor seeker went to another master, thinking that this Linchi is mad. I ask a simple question and he hits me hard and then chases me out of the temple. He is completely insane. He went to another master, a master who was opposed to Linchi. They had their monasteries nearby in the same hills. He went to there. He said, "This man must be right because he is opposed to Linchi. And now I know why he is opposed." He went to the master, the another master, and asked the same question. The master said, "Have you been ever before to any other master?" He said, "Yes." But it was wrong of me to go there. I went to see Linji. Hit me hard and chased me out of the temple. Suddenly the master became very ferocious, as if he will kill him. He pulled his sword out of his sheath, and the man ran away. And the man said, "What do you think? Do you think I am an ignorant man? If Linji can do that, I will kill you completely." He asked somebody on the way what to do. The man said, "You go back to Linji, he is more compassionate." And he went, and he became enlightened. When he went back, Linji asked, "Why you have come back?" He said, "The other man is dangerous, more dangerous than you. He would have completely killed me. He seems to be a maniac, ferocious." Linji said, "We help each other. It is a conspiracy. Now you be here and never ask again how to be a Buddha, because you are already. One has just to live it. You live it like a Buddha. You don't bother and don't try to become. This is the greatest teaching possible. You live it out. And this is what I would like you also to do. You live it out. You need not bother to become. You are already. And Buddhahood is a being. It is never a becoming. You can never become. How can you become a Buddha? Either you are or you are not. How can you become? How can an ordinary stone become a diamond? Either it is or it is not. Becoming is not possible. So you decide. Either you are or you are not. If you are not, forget anything about it. If you are, there is no need to think about it. In either way, you simply be whatsoever you are. In that very being, everything is catch hold of. You can catch hold of emptiness without any effort. That is not very good, said Sekko. You have not got anything there. "Well, master," said the monk, "please show me a better way." "There are no ways, better or worse. The way doesn't exist. Because the way means that something has to become. The way means that some distance has to be traveled. The way means that you and the goal are separate. The way is possible if I am traveling to come to you. The way is possible if you are traveling to come to me. But how the way is possible if I am trying to be myself? There is no distance. If you are trying to reach yourself, the way is not possible. There is no space, no distance. You are already yourself. The way doesn't exist. That's why Zen is called the pathless path, the gateless gate. The gate is not there, and this is the gate. The pathless path, the path doesn't exist. And to understand this is the path. The Zen effort is to throw you on your reality immediately. No need to postpone. Well, master, said the monk, please show me a better way. He is still in the same trap. The ego is asking, then something else may be possible. Something else can be done, and you can catch hold of emptiness. Thereupon, Siko seized the monk's nose and gave it a great yank. Why Zen masters are so rude? And only Zen masters are so rude. Because they have a real compassion. And you can be thrown to yourself only in such a way. There is no other way. You need an electric shock. You need a shock treatment. Why a shock treatment? Because only in a shock for a small portion of time your thinking stops, otherwise not. Only in a shock you become aware, alert, your sleep drops. Otherwise you are a sleepwalker. Unless somebody hits you hard, your sleep cannot be broken. Sikko seized the monk's nose and gave it a great yank. Ach, held the monk, you hurt me. In this ach is the whole mystery. Somebody yanks on your nose. What happens inside? First thing, it was never expected. He was expecting some intellectual answer. This is rather total. He was asking for some theory, some doctrine, some method, technique, a head-to-head communication he wanted. This is rather total. The total master jumps on him, just like a cat jumps on a mouse. A total thing. The whole cat jumps, not the head. And the whole mouse is caught, not the head. This is a total thing, unexpected. And in its unexpectedness is the key. Because if the mind can expect, there will be no shock. If the mind can expect, then the mind is already ready. So if you go to Siko, remember well, he will not do the same to you again. Because you can expect it now. He will do something absolutely unexpected. Sometimes it has happened in the history of Zen, because Zen masters throw people out of the window, jump on them. They can do anything. Sometimes it has happened that people will go completely ready. All dimensions are limited. What can you do? You can hit, you can throw, you can jump on the man. Few alternatives are there. People will go completely ready. But you cannot deceive a master. He will not do anything. He will simply sit silently. And that will be unexpected. unexpectedness is the key, because in an unexpected moment the mind cannot function. That's what arc means. The mind has simply stopped. This voice doesn't come from the mind. It comes from your totality. It is not manipulated by the ego, because there is no time for the ego to manipulate. It has happened so suddenly. The master has jumped upon you so suddenly. There was no time to prepare, to get ready, to do something. This arc comes from your whole body, mind, soul. From your very depth of emptiness it comes. It has a flavor of the total. And there is no manipulator. Nobody has done it. It has happened. And when something happens and the doer is not, it is how emptiness is caught. How you catch hold of emptiness. This is emptiness. This arc comes from the inner emptiness. Nobody is a doer to it. The disciple has not done it. It has simply happened. And in that happening, in that arc, mind is not functioning. It has passed through the mind, but it has not come from the mind. And it has passed through the mind with such a fast speed. In fact, if you are really hurt on the nose, yanked, the arc that happens breaks the sound barrier. You go and ask the physiologist. It moves faster than sound. It has a total energy in it. And it is beautiful. Because this man may have completely forgotten the spontaneousness of being. He is thrown back to his spontaneousness. He is thrown back deeper from the mind into his own innermost shrine. From there comes this arc. Unexpected. Not doing it, it happens. It happens out of emptiness. You have caught hold. Ach, El the monk, you hurt me. And immediately comes back the echo. You hurt me. It lasts only for a single moment, not even a single moment. A minute part of it, a glimpse, a lightning. And immediately the mind takes control again. You hurt me. Look, these three words, you hurt me. This is the whole life. You and me and the hurt. Immediately the whole mind is back with the all basic elements, you, me and the heart. That's the way to get hold of emptiness, said Sekko. He has revealed it. He has not explained, he has already given it. He has not only indicated, he has created a situation in which it happened. That's what a master is for, to create a situation in which things happen to you. To create a situation in which you can become aware of the mechanicalness of the mind and of the spontaneousness of your inner no-self. And then you can move by and by from the mind to the inner spontaneousness. You can become loose and natural. Once you understand that everything can go on without your mind trying to manipulate, everything in fact goes on very beautifully. The trouble starts when you take hold of it, when you try to manipulate. When you want the mind to be in the saddle, then the trouble starts. Otherwise everything goes on. And it goes on so beautifully. There is no need to improve it, and you cannot improve it. The master gave a glimpse of his inner being, because the arc came from the very center. It was not of the body, not of the mind. It was of the total. And in that moment, he functioned as a spontaneous being, not as a doer. This functioning can become your whole life. That is what religion should be. A religious life is a functioning of the spontaneous being. Situations are there every moment. You act not as a doer. You act spontaneously. Somebody smiles. What you do? You can smile as a doer. You can manipulate. You can smile because it will be impolite if you don't smile. You can smile because in a society you have to exist, and this man is very important. In fact, it is greatly flattering that he smiled at you. So you have to. It may be a bargain, a business, a trade, social mannerism. Or it may be simply unconscious habit. Somebody smiles, you react. You smile. A push button smile. But your being is absolutely unaffected. In fact, you are not in your smile at all. It is just on the lips, a painted thing. Just an exercise of the lips. Nothing in it. Absolutely empty. You manipulate. Somebody is dead. You weep. It happened. Once I stayed in a house, and the man of the house died. He had no wife. His sister came to help him arrange things. And I was staying and I was simply watching what is happening. Whenever somebody will come, the sister will look out of the door, and immediately she will start crying and weeping and saying things about the dead man, that you were so beautiful and you are gone, and our whole life will be now sad. A light has disappeared and everything. And she will do it so mechanically, immediately saying something, somebody is coming. She in fact told me that you sit more outside in the garden. If somebody comes, you simply give me a knock. And the man is gone and she is perfectly okay. Even tears will flow down her cheeks when she will cry and weep. And the man is out of the house, his back is towards the house, tears will disappear and he is perfectly okay talking and chatting and doing things. I was simply surprised. I asked, how you do it? You could have been a perfect actress. You simply do it so perfectly. Even tears come down. A manipulation. You are not only manipulating others' body, you are manipulating your own body. And this goes on and on continuously. All spontaneity is lost. You become a robot. This is how life becomes ugly, crippled. This is how a hell is created. Then your love is false, your hate is false. Your smile is false, your tears are false. And how do you suppose to live in such falsity and think of bliss? To live in such falsity and think of truth? To live in such falsity and think of liberation, moksha? There is no moksha for a false being. Falsity should drop. Be spontaneous, there is nothing to lose and everything to be gained. In the beginning it may seem that sometimes when you want to, when it was needed as a social mannerism to smile and the spontaneous smile is not there, you may feel a little awkward, but only in the beginning. Soon, your authenticity will be felt by others also. And soon, your authenticity will start paying you. It pays so tremendously that when a real smile will come on your lips, it will be as total as the arc. The whole being smiles. The whole being becomes a smile. All around you, your smile spreads like ripples in consciousness. Everybody who is near you will feel a purity, a bath-like purity. And you will feel such tremendous bliss happening to you. A simple act of authentic spontaneity, and immediately you are transported from this world to another world. Love, or even anger. I tell you, even positive emotions, false, are ugly. Even negative emotions, authentic, are beautiful. Even anger is beautiful. When your whole being feels it, every fiber of your being vibrant with it. Look at a small child angry, and then you will feel the beauty of it. His whole being in it, radiant, red his face. Such a small child, and looks so powerful that he can destroy the whole world. And what happens to a child? Once he is angry, after few minutes, few seconds, everything is changed. He is happy and dancing and running around the house again. Why this doesn't happen to you? You move from one falsity to another. When he has been angry really, anger is not a lasting phenomenon. It is a momentary thing by its very nature. If it is real, it lasts for few moments. And while it lasts authentic, it is beautiful. It harms nobody. A real spontaneous thing cannot harm anybody. Only falsity harms. This man who can be angry spontaneously, after a few seconds, the tide is gone. And he relaxes perfectly to the very other extreme. He becomes infinitely loving. This anger has not destroyed love. No authentic anger ever destroys love. On the contrary, it creates it again and again, renews it. If a wife and husband never get angry, you can be certain there exists no love between them. That is absolutely certain. But if sometimes they get angry, real angry, that anger refreshes everything. In fact, after the anger is gone, they have again a new honeymoon. Everything is fresh. The storm has passed. It has cleaned everything. Again they are new. They moved farthest. Now they fall in love again. And to fall in love again and again and again is the eternity of love. If there is no anger, real anger, you are boiling within and just go on smiling on the face because you are a husband and she is a wife, and anger will create trouble. You smile. That smile is false. The wife also knows that your smile is false. She is also smiling. And you also know that her smile is false. In the house, you live a false life. And this falsity becomes so ingrained, then you completely lost track of what real smile is, of what real kiss is, of what real embrace is. You completely lost track. Then you go in the motions. You embrace the wife, you kiss her, and thinking of other things. You move through the motions, gestures, impotent, dead. How can your life be a fulfillment? And I tell you, even negative emotions are good if real. And if they are real, by and by, their very reality transforms them. They become more and more positive. And the moment comes when all positivity and negativity disappears. You simply remain authentic. You don't know what is good, what is bad. You don't know what is positive, what is negative. You are simply authentic. This authenticity will allow you to have the glimpse of the real. Only the real can know the real. The true can know the truth. The authentic can know the authentic that surrounds you. That's the way to get hold of emptiness. The master created a situation, allowed the disciple to move in a spontaneous act. Howsoever small, just arc, and a lightning happens. This can become a satori, the first enlightenment. So remember few things. One, you have to move from the mechanical to the spontaneous. Two, from the mental, the verbal, to the non-verbal, non-mental. From the part to the total. From the false to the real. And from the ego to the non-ego. from the self to the no self. Already the non-self exists by the side of yourself. Just a change of attention, a change of gear. The non-mechanical exists by the side of the mechanical. The real is always waiting by the side of the false. Just a change of gestalt. Just a look towards the spontaneous. Try it. 24 hours, whenever you have an opportunity to move from the false to the real, immediately change the gear. From the mechanical to the authentic. And remain floating as if you are in emptiness. Don't try to control yourself too much. Remain loose and natural. Enough for today.